The married couple in the RV, the ring scraping.
Mm-hmm.
Not the hook. Don't look back.
Oh, yeah, the guy hanging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the hook hand always makes me think of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I mean, that is an urban legend. And it is in that movie that we watched.
But it's also been told so many times in different locations.
That's the whole point of an urban legend, though.
That and, an urban legend. That and, like, the babysitter one.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, the person in the house or whatever.
Yeah.
That always freaked me out. I'm legit. I love to babysit and I love children, but
I don't like to
that story scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, that's why I don't like to babysit.
I love it.
That and aren't you glad you didn't turn on the lights?
Oh.
You want to talk about a dark fucking urban legend?
Yeah.
I mean, you can talk about it right now if you want to.
She did it, didn't she?
I did indeed. I turned the volume down so you couldn't hear the beeps on my computer.
Rude! Oh my god. So, yeah.
Wait, you should probably introduce our podcast and the guests that we have today.
No, forget her. Sorry. Well, welcome to Spookier Bus, the podcast exploring the world of all things paranormal, serial, and conspiratorial.
I'm November.
I'm FW, and today we have...
Don't you dare.
Am I going to say it or you?
Don't you dare.
We have MW sister Mandy on the show with us today. Because neither of them, there's a running joke in the family that Mandy doesn't want us to tell, but MW really does, so I'm just going to settle it right there.
I mean, to be fair, you started it today. Well,
that's fair, I did today. You're right. Yeah, but I'm also ending it.
So today, we are going to talk about California. My sister was actually born there. She lived there for a while. I visited. I never lived there.
Can we also talk about how, to start our show, Mandy brought us Dunkaroos?
Dunkaroos!
And I'm literally licking the icing out of this thing.
Oh, so good.
I've already said I want a stocking full of Dunkaroos for Christmas.
Smart.
I literally was like, Dunkaroos and Jamba Juice. That's what I want. A stocking full of both.
Aw, poor Jamba Juice.
Oh. Don't you dare. I'm holding out hope that there will be another one again in Orlando.
Wait, they closed the one over on one over on Crossroads?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. My favorite thing from Jamba Juice was the pumpkin pie smoothie. Aww. It literally tastes like a pumpkin pie mixed with a whole can of whipped cream and some ice. Oh, it was so good. We used to get that in college.
Yeah, I tell my sister all the time that she needs to get a job there. Like, if you work there, you could have gotten discounted drinks.
You probably get free smoothies.
I do get free smoothies because I'm, like, one of the VIP members because I go so much.
Every day. She has pictures on her Facebook and it's a count of what time it is.
I think I got to, like, maybe 50 Jamba Juices a year, like, because I would number every one. It was like, all right, how many could I have in this year?
That's amazing.
So I'm very sad that the Jamba Juice count, I think, ended at, like, maybe 10 or 12 this year. I mean, I did get a couple numbers in when I went to Cali because I literally went every day I was in Cali except for 2 days.
Nice.
But yeah, I had 2 gift cards, blew them out.
Yep, this will be us in 2022. Every morning, Jamba Juice and convention and Disneyland.
Yep, I will have a Jamba Juice every day.
That's fair. I don't blame you at all.
Alright, so, Mandy, do you want to have the honors of going first today?
Oh, sure, I will totally go first. So, once again, my name is Mandy. I'm also known as the resident Jedi Master on the Orlando Sideshow podcast. You guys can catch me there on most Monday nights. As MW brought up, I was born in Northern California in Fairfield, but spent most of my time in Southern and Central California in Oceanside, San Diego, Anaheim, and the LA area. I was really excited when MW in November were doing an episode on Cali and asked them if they wouldn't mind if I popped in my head, showed my love and support for my state. Most people in San Diego know the beautiful site and name of this beautiful hotel. It's called the Hotel Del Coronado. It's located on 1500 Orange Avenue in Coronado. If you guys go to the Hotel Del Coronado site, it says a living legend for more than 130 years. The Del celebrates its rich history as the proud host to celebrities, royalty, U.S. presidents, and beach-loving guests for generations. It was built in 1888, and I'm assuming it's supposed to be Alyssa, maybe, or Alicia? Alicia, I'm thinking that's how you say it. It's Alicia Babcock and Hampton L. Story, and designated a National Historic Landmark in 1977. Hosting people like President Harrison, author L. Frank Baum, if you don't know him, he is the writer of Wizard of Oz.
Oh, cool.
President Taft, actor Charlie Chaplin, Lindbergh, if you don't know who Lindbergh is, that is...
Charles Lindbergh?
Yep, okay. So Spirit of St. Louis.
Yeah.
President Roosevelt. Actress Marilyn Monroe was out there filming Some Like It Hot.
Oh, such a good movie.
Never seen it. I just love Marilyn. Just her aesthetic.
President Nixon was out there for a presidential dinner. President Carter, President Ford, and Prince Edward. So they have hosted quite a bit. I mean, this list goes on, but that's just a good few names right there for you.
Yeah, that's a lot.
They also did the movie The Stump Man, which was filmed out there in 77 and 78. They actually had to do a replica of part of the building because they legit blew it up.
That's awesome.
They were like, this part, we don't want blown up. So if you can make a replica, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah. Just make it look similar.
We'll leave it standing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can still film here. Just don't actually blow it up for me.
Don't hurt our building.
But the most famous is actually the most famous that's in the ghost hunting field would be Kate Morgan, the beautiful stranger, who came to the Dell in November of 1892. Kate was in her mid-20s and had checked in alone under the name of Lottie A. Bernard from Detroit. 5 days after she checked in, on November 29th, she was found with a gunshot wound to the head on the hotel exterior staircase leading to the beach. They have a long stretch of beach. Like, this hotel is not just one building. It's an extensive amount of buildings.
Okay.
So they have gorgeous beachfront. But apparently, on her way out, apparently took a gunshot to the head.
Awesome.
The San Diego coroner later determined it to be self-inflicted, but there's obviously some people that are kind of unsure in that decision.
Right, right.
According to the Dell website, that they say, Kate's spirit seems to have remained at the Dell, where she tends to occupy and haunt her former guest room, room 3327, but her beautiful vision and ghostly pranks can be experienced throughout the rambling resort and grounds. The hotel also published a book of their own about her called The Beautiful Stranger, The Ghost of Kate Morgan and the Hotel Del Coronado. An excerpt from the book says, she generally limits her activity to fleeting appearances and inexplicable antics. Guests in Kate's room report everything from breezes that come from nowhere to having to deal with a television set that turns on and off by itself.
I want to watch TV now!
I don't do ghost shit. I mean, like, I totally believe in it, but, like, it's, you listen to our show, so you, like, know that it fucking freaks me out. Yep.
Because when I've listened to your all's podcast, I'll be like, I would totally go. She should go with me. Let's be real.
She should go with me.
I'm even wearing one of my ghost hunting shirts from one of the ghost hunting things I've done. Like, I'm the person you want to go to for ghost hunting. I have no... I'm like, let's go. I'm the one who's got the no fear that's also going to get herself in trouble.
Yes, she's the one that wants to go, so definitely.
Yeah, so I'm actually mad I never made it out to Del Coronado, so now I'm like, oh, we'll be checking that out when I go back to Cali again.
Right.
Obviously, Kate's spirit does not bother the Dell, as this information can easily be found on their site under Experience... then history, and then if you just scroll down, it gives you a lovely timeline. Like, you have this lovely line that goes down on the side, left and right, it's the dates and these pictures, and you click on the pictures, it'll give you more details. And she has this gorgeous black and white portrait there.
Really?
Uh-huh.
That's awesome.
But it also shows you the pictures of when the presidents have been there, when Chaplin was there. And as I said, you just click on it and be like, and it'll tell you a blurb about their time there and what they were doing there. It's extremely historic. I can't remember the name of the woman who is currently in possession of the property, but she said over time that she's been there, she's been digging up stuff that's been left there, or she finds. Actually, the pictures of, it's Harrison, it was, Harrison was out there. His great-great-grandson was sending pictures to her of his time there.
That's cool.
So, or no, it was, no, or it was his great-grandfather that was there who took the pictures and he sent it. But yeah, like, they've been sending her all these pictures of all these things that have changed from the hotel from then till now, or stuff that was going on at those times. Right.
That's really cool.
Yeah. The San Diego Magazine added to these experiences saying, guest experience. Back in Valentine's Day of 2000, a young couple reported a string of supernatural events, including covers being ripped off of them in the middle of the night. In the gift shop, memorabilia from Marilyn Monroe's film, Some Like It Hot, often fall to the ground inexplicably. Employees speculate that Kate does not like sharing the spotlight. So I was like, I thought that was like a little interesting blurb from the San Diego Magazine, because obviously, from when I was looking through this research, and you're going online, just looking up Kate Morgan and the hotel, a lot of it's like California tourist sites, and they're promoting this. They're like, hey, check this out. Like, this is a great place to go to, and if you really want to go for something haunted, come to this hotel.
Right. So can you still stay there?
Yeah, you can still stay there.
Oh, so it's like an opening, it's still like an open functioning hotel.
Oh, I'll get to
all right,
that.
All right.
Yeah, oh, no, it's still functioning. Ghost hunters. Paranormal research have documented supernatural activity in Kate's room using infrared cameras, night vision goggles, radiation sensors, toxic chemical indicators, microwave imaging systems, and high-frequency sound detectors.
That sounds like a lot of stuff that might give you cancer.
But, like, this is legit stuff that ghost hunters come out with. And they're, like, they set up their whole entire system. They set up their, you know, everything.
Yeah. Have any TV shows been there? Like, has Ghost Hunters been there or, like,
So, this makes me mad. So, while I was doing the research on this, I swear to God, I've seen an episode where Ghost Hunters has gone out there.
Yeah.
I went through their IMDb. I went through the DVDs I own. I cannot find anything that says they were out there. But I want to say I've seen them out there because I remember them talking about an episode, this will lead going into this, about a bride. So, I'll lead into that. Like,
okay.
Hold on. Let me not spoil that just yet. The Travel Channel actually did head out there, though.
Okay.
So, Travel Channel headed out there and obviously recognized Adele and Kate with a little bit more of a backstory not given by the hotel, though. So, everything I told you previously, it's on the hotel website. And I said, you click experience, it's history, and go to the timeline. It already tells you some of that.
That's cool.
But what the Travel Channel brings up when they did their piece was they said, Kate Morgan has haunted the hotel since 1892, the year she checked in and awaited the arrival of her husband. That wasn't previously brought up. Where is this about a husband?
Right.
So looking into what Travel Channel said, they said, the two were traveling con artists. Not surprisingly, her husband never showed up. And 4 days later, the despondent and pregnant Kate was found dead at the bottom of an outdoor staircase leading to Coronado Beach, with a self-inflicted gun wound to the head.
Oh, shit.
Where's the husband?
Yeah.
What's this about a con artist and she was pregnant?
Yeah, I was going to say that was nothing in the original story of her being pregnant. I have chills. That gave me goosebumps.
Now, and then bear with
it
you.
It got real.
But bear with you. The book that the hotel does, it's more a little bit fact-based on what they actually have. So bear with you. This can be, I don't know if this is a fact-based thing that you're going to see in the book, or this is someone else's research going deeper into it, going, hey, there could be a correlation. Because I said, when you talk about the ghost hunters, like, I swear to God, there's an episode where they went to a hotel and a bride had died on stairs. Yeah. But bear with you, I can also be thinking about the episode where there literally was a bride coming down the stairs. She fell and broke her neck because that is another hotel that happened to as well on the coast.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a lot of hotels that are haunted.
Aren't all hotels haunted? Are there any non-haunted hotels anywhere? Anywhere? In the world.
I mean, newer hotels maybe, but even then, if something happened on the property during building.
Or before.
That's true.
It's like, maybe it's an Indian burial ground or something.
Oh, God.
Poltergeist!
Some poltergeist shit in there. That movie terrified me as a child.
Yeah. No, that, rightfully so. That's definitely one that you're just like, nope, I'm good.
Yep.
That one in Exorcist as kids, you're just like, nah.
I didn't watch The Exorcist until I was in college, and I actually really like The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Yeah.
The one, because it, like, goes on through, like, the trial. I actually really like that one. I've watched it a few times since then.
I don't know. I never, like, The Exorcist just doesn't seem scary to me, but I think it's...
But I think that's the point. It's not, I mean, it's, like,
it's not
creepy,
really,
but it's not, like, scary because it's supposed to be, this is, they're focusing more on the trial of, like, with the family and the church as opposed to the actual, like, her possession of her.
Oh, no, I mean, like, The Exorcist, like, with Reagan.
Oh,
like the original one?
Oh, yeah, I feel like
it was more of a comedy.
Well, now, yeah, but back in the day, my grandma still won't watch that movie.
Well, yeah,
she's like, that movie's fucking terrifying.
No, because at the time, it was extremely scary, because you have to think about it. Back then, religion was a lot more tight-knit than what it is now. It's a lot looser now compared to what it was then. So even the little girl who was asked to do Reagan and say all those words, she felt very uncomfortable. Like, she came out she was very uncomfortable because it was like, not stuff she should be saying, and she was like, oh, I feel so wrong and bad for this, and I was like, nope, we're paying you to do it.
Right. And there's like a lot of like creepy things that happened on the set of that movie too.
Oh, there's a few movies like that.
Yeah. I've read like some things like during The Exorcist, there's like a lot of like really weird things they couldn't explain.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get goosebumps talking about it. I don't want to talk about demons anymore. We're talking about something else.
Okay, you're good. So, going back to the San Diego Magazine, they did address a conspiracy theory surrounding Kate in 2015, saying, the coroner determined it was a suicide. There was record of her buying a .44 caliber from Chick's Gun Shop in downtown, but skeptics think her husband or lover pulled the trigger.
Interesting. But they never saw a man?
Because remember, they...
Because he never checked in, so there's, like, no record of him anywhere.
Because according to Travel Channel, no one ever showed up.
Right.
But according to San Diego Magazine, they're acknowledging that there could have been a husband or a lover that would have shot her.
Interesting.
Yeah, again, this is during the time where there's not, like, security that we have today.
Right.
When I was doing my research, I found an old picture that someone took of the guest book at the... Because you remember, you did a guest book. You just signed a guest book, right?
Yeah, you signed in, yeah.
Because remember, she didn't sign under her actual name. She signed under an alias.
Yeah.
how are you going to check that alias? You really don't have proof to check the alias.
Right. It's just all, like, yeah, I believe you.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about now.
Because that's other
thing. Yeah. She used to be like that.
Yeah, I was like, she checked in alone.
Yeah.
She never said there was going to be someone else. It doesn't mean someone, you know, or...
Right. But also in the 1890s, a woman being alone is also a weird thing.
Yeah.
For that time frame. Like, just for a woman to be by herself. Because it wasn't really, like, I don't think it was, like, socially acceptable then.
No, not really. Because if you think about it, we as women didn't get the right to vote until 1920. So right. We were still, in the beginning of the 19th century, trying to find our way to stand out as women as we have rights.
Right. Look at absolutely.
Look at Rosie the Riveter and all that. That became such a big thing during World War I and World War II because we want to show that we can stand as women.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't need a man. But it was still, you know, I'm not saying there weren't women who stood on their own, but doesn't mean you weren't shunned either.
Right. It doesn't mean it's not weird.
Yeah.
For that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another sad tale that also came from the Channel Travel, though, that was briefly touched about,
mm-hmm.
was they did mention that's not the only creepy spot. So is Room 3519, formerly was known as Room 3502. Once a maid's room, it's been the site of numerous paranormal occurrences, such as objects moving around by themselves. Allegedly, the mistress of the hotel owner committed suicide in the room when she was found out she was pregnant.
What is it with people murdering themselves while pregnant?
Well, now
in this hotel.
But what intrigues me is going back to the urban legend conversation we had earlier.
Yeah.
She apparently did it when she found out she was pregnant.
Yeah.
What is the possibility that Kate Morgan and her
are the same person?
Maybe the same person, or just maybe her story turned into Kate Morgan. Maybe Kate Morgan didn't really exist.
Okay.
Because once again, we have a random name. What if that was an actual person, but we just attached it to that? Because maybe.
Right.
Lottie just didn't check out appropriately, or, you know, God knows what.
Yeah. Interesting. I like that theory.
Yeah. So, funny enough, if you go to California's official tourist websites, www.visitcalifornia.com, the Hotel Del Coronado and Kate Morgan are part of their promotion, Haunted Spots in California.
Hmm.
As I said, like, if you literally look up the Hotel Del Coronado, or you look up Kate Morgan, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's actual just California tourist sites that just are going to pop up and be like, hey... Here, some spots to look at.
Yeah.
Because obviously there were, with that website, places like Alcatraz popped up, Whaley House popped up.
Yeah. Shut up.
Wait, which one? Alcatraz or Whaley's?
Alcatraz. No, earlier I was trying to remember that we were talking about urban legends, and I was trying to remember the name Alcatraz, and I fucking said Azkaban. And I was like, you know, they like escaped from Azkaban, and then I was like, wait, that's not right.
No, honey.
I meant Alcatraz. Azkaban is the one.
But I wonder.
Harry Potter.
But I wonder now that you put that connection together, I'm like, wait a second. What if they're like when she was writing it, J.K. Rowling was writing those books, she used the history based on Alcatraz, because apparently no one has ever successfully escaped.
Yeah.
And the what was it, three men or however many that were in that group that technically escaped, their bodies were never found.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, actually, that's exactly what we were talking about. Because when I was in elementary school, we used to have this section of books that was basically, like, conspiracy theories. So that's how I learned about, like, D.B. Cooper. And I can't remember the name of those men that did it, but I remember reading that book. And their bodies were never found, so it's... They think that they were eaten by sharks. Because sharks patrol Alcatraz. Not, like, patrol, but, like, they're always around Alcatraz.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's what they think happened, because they escaped in the middle of the night.
So you're not, you could easily not be wrong. That could have been an inspiration for her, because it's not, I mean, yes, it's an American history, but Europeans, it's the same thing. We study European history. They do study some American history.
Yeah.
I don't know the extent of what they study.
Right. I'm sure we could ask somebody, but.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they haven't heard about it and been like, huh.
Yeah, or because it's one of the top places to visit. In California.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
And, like, when you come, when, you know, like, if I go to Europe, I'm going to go try to visit, I want to say, probably every tourist spot that I can. And I imagine when Europeans come here, they want to do the same thing. They go to Disney World. They go to Disneyland. They go to Alcatraz. They, you know, go to all these places, like, that are, like, historical places for us.
Yeah.
So, it could be.
Another thing that was pointed out by the San Diego Magazine in 2015 was that room 3327 is the Dell's most requested room. If anyone has seen Smallville, I know you and Mom were big in it back in the day.
Saw is that wasn't it like paranormal or like supernatural or something?
It's Superman, but all of the like
it's his beginning. So what it is, it's Clark Kent prior to coming to Metropolis. It's him as a teenager, struggling as a teenager, you know, coming into these powers, and then...
Got it.
Yeah.
But then it's like, so when his thing crashed,
I always remember
all of this, like, stuff came out, and, like, it infected all of these other people who now have supernatural abilities.
Got it. I remember seeing, like, previews for it when I was younger, but I never watched it.
I watched it for a little bit until, you know, spoiler, because I feel like this is not a spoiler at this point.
It's like 20 years old.
Yeah, I know.
I think it ended like 20 years ago.
I think I stopped watching like the last two seasons.
Pretty much by the time Lex and Lana were like hooking up, I was like, I'm out. No. I'm sorry, you guys. That for me was personally jumping a shark. I'm not saying that's when the show jumped a shark. For me personally, I felt that was a jump of a shark.
Right. Let's see. I'm trying to see when it ended. Come on, internet. 2011, so 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Was it only 9 years ago that it ended?
Feels like forever.
Yeah, it feels a lot longer.
Because Tom Wellington goes back, or he is in Lucifer.
Oh, I'm very well aware Pierce is in there. But I also know they brought him back for Crisis on Infinite Earth, and I about died when they were showing, because it was after all, once again, spoilers, but, you know, you guys probably should have
watched Nerd Things, don't listen.
I was like, this guy would get nerdy real quick.
We're also a nerd podcast.
There you go. Sorry, you brought a nerd.
Scary Stuff, Star Wars, Nerd Things, down the list.
Yeah, sorry, you kind of brought a nerd onto the show. But no, so.
God, one host.
Dang it. But no, when they did Infinite Earths, at that point, you know, all the Earths were destroyed except for one Earth had everybody been brought onto, and they were like, or not even everyone, not everyone made it to that Earth. And so when they won the day or saved the day, they weren't, you know, in the realization that some of the Earths did come back. They just think they're still on this one Earth that was the only still lasting one. And they touched base, like, one of the planets was Black Lightning. No, Black Lightning's still on the same Earth as everybody now, but it was like Doom Patrol, old school Smallville, like a few other ones. Like, it brought Lucifer on, which now I got addicted with Lucifer because I was like, wait, Lucifer's in this, you know, like, oh my god, they're all in the same universe. I was like, crap, now I gotta watch Lucifer. Even though
that's
just
a Netflix show, right?
Yeah.
I really want to watch it. I've seen a lot of things on it.
It's good.
Oh god, it's amazing.
Oh shit, sorry.
It's amazing. Going back, so Smallville actor Michael Rosenbaum actually wanted to stay there during the Comic-Con that year, and the rates at the time were $3.59 per night.
He's Lex Luthor, he can afford it.
Yeah. Like, he's Lex Luthor. He's just,
yeah.
Let me just rent
out
the,
yeah.
Let me just rent the whole hotel for the evening.
I mean, honestly, he probably has the money. He could do it.
But in the end, Kate is said to be buried at Mount Hope Cemetery in Division 5, Section 1. A later statement that was made was the late Alan May claimed to be a descendant of Kate, and in 1990, he published The Legend of Kate Morgan and reportedly purchased a tombstone for her unmarked grave at Mount Hope Cemetery. The Dell refutes the May story, though. So I'm not sure why they refute it, but they do. I'm going to leave you all with this one fun little fact. It was driving me crazy because when I was looking at the hotel, I don't remember seeing it when I went to San Diego because I don't think I ever made it all the way down out to, like, because it's San Diego Coronado area.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, why is this bugging me? Why is this bugging me? Why do I recognize this? And I happened to catch that if you live in the Orlando area and you happen to be listening, so you guys all know that big, wonderful place called Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever gone over to Magic Kingdom, there's a couple resorts around it. One of them is the Grand Floridian. The Grand Floridian is actually a 1980 hotel whose exterior architecture is actually based on the Hotel del Coronado.
That's pretty cool.
So I was like, oh my god, once I put those two together, I was like, that is why it was driving me crazy that I recognize this hotel.
Right.
Because, I mean, I've seen it on Travel Channel, I've seen it on plenty of other things. But I was like, oh my god, like, now I see the correlation of why that was so familiar to me and driving me crazy. It also drove me crazy that I could not pin down any, like, ghost hunters or... I can't remember all the ghost hunting teams that are out these days. All the ones that have made it onto Travel Channel, Sci-Fi, A&E.
Yeah, there's so many.
I could not pin down a single one that had been out to that resort.
Yeah.
But if you go to YouTube and you just put in Kate Morgan or put in Kate Morgan Hotel del Coronado, there are so many just YouTubers or YouTube paranormal channels that have been out there.
Yeah.
One of the ones I was catching, so the camera is angled at the bed. Behind the bed is the bathroom, and they hear a noise. He jumps out of the bed to go find the noise, leaves the camera in there, and the bathroom light comes on and then turns off. But they don't realize that until after they go back and watch the footage, going, hey, did we get the noise recorded? And then they see that the bathroom light turned on and off.
Yeah.
But
wow. Interesting. That's the thing I like, because, like, I feel like everything on TV is obviously edited and made for TV, so it's made to be like, oh, this is so crazy, but some of the YouTube stuff, they're like, no, we didn't get shit, like, or, like, check this out, like, they don't feel like they
yeah
try to make it as, I mean, they do, but
there are some, but there are also some who are genuinely like, well, nothing happened. Maybe next time.
But here's my thing. It might not be a very long or rich story.
Yeah.
But a hotel that's of that age, I'm hard to believe that no one has ever thought to come out there. And, I mean, as I said, I quoted the San Diego Magazine, Travel Channel. The hotel itself has it on their website.
Right.
Busy California.
Maybe they just never got anything when they went, so they didn't.
Or maybe they don't let TV shows out there.
No, they do.
Oh, they do?
And that was another thing. And then, like, Ghost and Gravestone. It is a St. Augustine-based company that does ghost tours here. Also does them in Massachusetts, Georgia. Yeah, Florida and Cali. And they even bring it up on their website. Hey, check out, if you're here, check out the Hotel del Coronado. So I'm like, how have none of these channels been out here?
Right, to, like, record something. Yeah, but you could be right, though. It could be that they didn't get anything. So they're just like, well, we won't air this episode. We'll try again.
But then again, you say that, but look at how many times Ghost Hunters has not found something but aired the episode.
That's true.
There were times that they...
But that might be what's bitten them in the butt and made them go, maybe we shouldn't do this.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because if it's a big name, people want to see it whether they find something or not.
Yeah. That's
true. You know, like, if you're going to the Stanley Hotel, like, nobody cares if you find something. They just want to see it.
See, it's the Stanley Hotel, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we decided that I'm going to go next because my story is really sad, even though it's very widely known. I actually just... Recently, I've been watching this girl on Facebook and YouTube. Her name's Bailey Sarian. I believe she does, like, makeup and talks about murder.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said that today.
One, her makeup is incredible.
Oh, God, yeah.
Two, I really like her voice and the way she tells stories. I've always, like, had a fascination with this, especially because it was one of the bases for the last season of American Horror Story, which 1985 was my favorite season so far. It was great. But I'm going to do Richard Ramirez. So I'm going to do The Night Stalker. So this is going to get real heavy, but I'm going to try to, like, slip through it. So, also, did you guys
terrible analogy.
He was alive until 2013.
What?
Not surprised.
He only died 7 years ago. Like, he's been in prison that whole time.
I thought he died like,
today. So. I know. Like, I feel like talking about all these people that are, like, you know, that were so famous, like, these famous serial killers, which is a horrible reason to be famous, but... That's what they are. They were all alive into the 2000s. And you think it was like, oh, that was in, you know, the 70s. That was in the 80s. Like, that's so long ago. It's really not. It was like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that long ago.
Hey. Some of us are from the 80s.
Hey, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's not that long ago. Ricardo, I'm going to horribly butcher this Spanish. Ricardo Levia Munoz Ramirez was born February 29th, 1960, and he's also known as Richard Ramirez. He was born in El Paso, Texas. He was the youngest of five children.
Don't look at me.
His father, his home life when he was a child was absolutely awful. That's the thing that gets me so much about this story is not just obviously he did horrific things, but how horrible his childhood was. Like, his father was prone to fits of anger and was physically abusive to everyone in their household. Like, he just got the shit beat out of him constantly. When he was 12, he actually ended up kind of moving in and had, like, this role model, this idol that was his cousin. His cousin's name was Miguel, or Mike Ramirez. He was a U.S. Army Green Beret, so he's a combat veteran. So he, you know, talks about all the things he did in Vietnam. So, like, he would share Polaroids of photos of his victims. So that's the Vietnamese woman that he'd raped, the people that he'd killed. In some pictures, Mike was posing with severed heads of women that he'd abused. So this is the kind of role model that this person is growing up with, first off. They say he began to smoke marijuana at the age of 10 and bonded with Mike over joints and gory war stories. So, like, I don't really know what marijuana has to do with that because I don't really see that being a bad thing. But the fact that, you know, that's... At 10 years old, that's a little young.
Even to smoke a regular cigarette, that's still pretty early.
Yeah, that's, like, really young.
But also think about this. Back then... That substance was very different than it was now. And even now we have issues with that substance with being laced with fentanyl and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So back then, God knows how strong or how effective it was.
Right.
It could have been, heck, even borderline a psychedelic back then.
Oh, absolutely. That's
I think in this context, it's more of, like, him singing, like, the cool uncle. Because, like, if you even, you know, even now, like, people like video games and, you know, violence is just something you're seeing from a distance. It's different when you're... seeing it in real life. So I think it was just the...
When you're seeing pictures.
Cool person.
Yeah, when you're seeing pictures of your cousin.
Yeah.
Like...
I'm this badass. I'll let you drink and I'll let you this and I'll let you this. And this is what I've done.
Yeah, and all these horrible things that I've done to all these women.
Yeah.
So this is how you, like... This is how his you know...
Perception.
Yeah, his perception of women, like his love map and all these things go into... Oh, women are awful. I hate them. I'm gonna murder all of them.
Well, because also remember, nature versus nurture.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, if this is the environment you're raised in, you just think that's how it always is.
Yep. Exactly. That's... I actually really love that debate. We did a huge... When I was in AP Psychology in high school, we did a huge, like, nature versus nurture debate. And nature is the winner. It's not nurture. But it's... And that's exactly what it is. It's because it's your environment. It's exactly... All of it. Everything has to go into it, but it's just, I can't imagine. But Mike also taught his cousin, you know, how all of his military skills, such as killing people with stealth, so like taught him how to do these things. So basically, I'm going to raise you to be a murderer. It's a great fucking idea for a 10-year-old. So around this time, obviously, Richard Ramirez is still living at home. He's with his cousin a lot, but he's learning how to sneak out. He's learning how to stay quiet and do all of these things. The story that gets me is about Mike and his wife. I don't know if you guys know this or not. It's in most of the Richard Ramirez stories. But on May 4th, 1973, Richard was at his cousin Mike's house. And... He was standing in the room when Mike shot his wife in the face with a .38 caliber revolver. Mm. Keep in mind, Jesse at the time, I'm pretty sure was pregnant.
In front of a 13-year-old.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yeah. So that's... Yeah. And like after this happened... It says that Richard kind of withdraws within himself. And he later that year moves in with his older sister... Ruth and her husband Roberto. Roberto's not that great of a role model either. Not because he killed a lot of people in Vietnam, but because he's a peeping Tom.
Oh, Jesus.
So he takes the I like in this part they call him Richie instead of Richard. They say Richie. Also, I'm reading this most of this from Wikipedia.
Because you made it rhyme and it's creepier.
Yeah. Most of this information I've read a lot about Richard Ramirez in a really kind of creepy way. So I know a lot of this anyways, but I'm just reading this off Wikipedia. But he takes Richard with him when he's, like, gonna go peek in women's windows. So he learns, you know, how to, what windows to look into, where to look for things. At this point as well, he also starts taking LSD. And that's when he starts getting into Satanism, which is, like, his whole thing that Satan told him he needed to do these things. And that's the whole reason why. Exactly. Mandy's rolling her eyes so hard they might pop out of her head.
I'm just remembering the episode of American Horror Story where they're, like, out in the woods.
Are you talking about,
Spoilers if you haven't seen 1985 yet.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Are you talking about 1985 or are we talking about Roanoke?
1985.
Okay, sorry.
When he goes out in the woods and he's, like... Ta-da.
Yeah, because the whole premise of 1985 is they're, like, at that summer camp, and the reason that they're all dead in the summer camp is to keep Richard Ramirez there. Because once you die in the summer camp, you don't really die. Like, your spirit stays there. So they take turns guarding Richard Ramirez's body.
So this is kind of... No, okay, I know...
He follows the girl out there.
Well, no, yeah. No, because what I was going to say is I know with the way that those shows are... that show is shot... They certain ones intertwine with other ones. My first thought is, so does this one intertwine with the loop of Murder House?
Because no.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Okay.
It's supposed to be, like, modernish, but it's a different time frame. Because Murder House is the 2000s, and this is in the 80s. But I think they mentioned something about the hotel in it.
But doesn't it also correspond with Michael?
No. Then it is, because hotel and Murder House are connected.
Yeah, but it's like way before.
Okay.
So it's like none of the same characters or none of the same.
Oh yeah,
like,
of course. Yeah.
They just like casually mention it. So
it's the same.
There's a throw to it.
It's kind of like the same Ring of Hell then.
Yes.
Because that's what it is. A lot of them, it's which Ring of Hell are you in? So they connected Murder House, Hotel, and Coven into that loop. But then
Apocalypse helped with that too.
Yep, that's right. But then you also have Freak Show.
Asylum.
Those two are in the same circle.
Yep. I think Roanoke's in that one, too.
I can't remember if Roanoke is or not.
Roanoke was creepy.
I loved Roanoke. I'm going to say it right now. I know so many people are like, absolutely not. I loved Roanoke.
Also under a lot of influence during that season of certain varieties that we have may or may not have mentioned already in my story. So that season is very blurry to me.
I just remember watching it during one of the hurricanes. The last, like not this past one, but the one before that. Where they were like, oh, it's going to hit us. Oh, it's going to hit us.
Oh, Irma?
I think so.
Was it the one where I lost my fence panels?
I don't remember, to be honest.
I don't know, but now I really want to rewatch 1985, and I know it's on Hulu and Netflix, so I might rewatch it.
See, I need to watch Cult, Apocalypse, and 1985. Those are the only three I haven't seen yet.
Cult is the only season I did not finish.
That's the one that I've heard the worst reviews about.
I hated it.
It was Roanoke first, and now a Cult is the one that everyone's like, just absolutely not.
It's garbage. It's the only one I actually haven't finished, and I love Billie Lourd. Like, I freaking love her with everything I am, and it's the first season that she's on, and, like, I just didn't like the direction it went. Like, Kai is off, like, an awful person, and, like, I just did not like it. It did not. Sorry.
Yeah, once I finish binge-watching some of the other stuff I'm doing, I'm gonna go over to, because I need to catch up on my American Horror Story. I really do.
It's so good. Also, did you know that the person that wrote American Horror Story also wrote Glee?
Yes.
Because that makes sense.
I find that interesting, because they're polar opposites.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
If I remember Glee, wasn't there stuff in Glee that he wanted to do that they were like, no, cut it back?
I have no idea. I've never actually seen Glee. I've only seen the performances on YouTube.
See, I've never seen Glee.
I think I've seen the first, like, two seasons, and then they went off and, like, went off to, like, college and stuff, and I was like, okay, I don't care anymore. I'm sorry, it's not awful. I didn't know
they went off to college.
I didn't either. That's funny. I've never seen it.
I just know because Sarah Jessica Parker's in one of the episodes, and they do the Let's Do a Kiki or whatever song.
I love that song.
Yeah.
But I know people saw that, but that was it. What's her name? Leah Michelle? Sarah Michelle?
Yeah. Leah Michelle. Leah Michelle, I think.
Leah Michelle. Yeah, people hate her. Apparently she's racist. I read that somewhere. And I was like, huh, alright, cool. Anyway.
Well, side tangent.
Is that Avenue Q that's like, everybody's racist? Or everybody's a little racist?
Oh, everyone's a little bit racist.
That's the song, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's Avenue Q, right?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And I was like, Jesus Christ. This is not what we're in for.
Oh my God.
But anyway, alright. So. Richard Ramirez, this awful fucking human being. We're just learning about his childhood still. We haven't even gotten into his Night Stalker days yet.
Meanwhile, he was going to serial killer elementary and middle school?
Yes.
And high school,
at
apparently?
Homeschool.
Home.
Okay, sorry. Serial killer homeschool. Yeah. I apologize. Let me correct that.
Oh, my God.
Yes, exactly. So, now we're going to go back and talk about Mike again. Mike was found not guilty of his wife's murder by reason of insanity. So he pleaded insanity and he actually won, which is really, really hard to do. Like, to plead insanity and, like, actually, like, win is really hard. So he was released from prison in 1977 after 4 years in the Texas State Mental Hospital. And his influence over Richard continued. You know, Richard obviously begins to he's getting older, so he's starting to have sexual fantasies, and all of these include a lot of violence, more than just like S&M play, like forced bondage, rape, those kinds of fantasies that are, you know, not good for a person. While he was still in school, he actually took a job at a Holiday Inn, and he used his pass key to rob sleeping patrons. So he would go in their rooms while they're sleeping and rob them. His employment obviously ended very abruptly at the hotel after a guest returned to their room to find Ramirez trying to rape his wife.
Oh, no.
This is in high school.
Why am I not surprised by this? The fact that you even said he had a job at a hotel, I was like, oh, this is going to go great.
Yeah, this is going to end well for him. And the husband, like, beat the shit out of Ramirez, of course, as any, I would hope any person would.
He should have beat him from inch from his life.
Yeah. Criminal charges were dropped, though, because the couple lived out of state and declined to return to Texas to testify for him.
That's not actually uncommon. That actually is not. If you look back a lot of cases, that is not uncommon.
Which is awful.
It is. Yeah. But it's just, but you gotta realize, in those situations, women, once they're raped, a lot of times, like, look at this, a lot of times they do not go and get themselves checked.
Of course, yeah.
Because it's just, you become so powerless, you become so embarrassed, mm-hmm. you don't understand or comprehend what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation, she's married, her husband was present when this happened.
Yeah.
She, at that point, is just like, I just want this done over with and don't ever want to deal with it again.
Yep, I don't ever want to talk about it, I don't want to think about it.
Because like, think about it this way, they're out of state, nobody has to know that it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cliche now for someone to be, I shouldn't even say it's cliche now, it still should not have happened.
Of course.
But back then, it's still, nowadays we look at it and we go, the woman is not at fault. And we know no woman is at fault because no one asked for it. But back then, well, what did she do to deserve it?
Exactly.
Yep.
And it's even still like that and it's still like that in some places now. I think, I mean, I'm hoping that the culture is getting better, but I don't know for sure. It's you're exactly right. That's exactly what it is. You're ashamed because you think you did something wrong when you didn't. It's not your fault.
Yeah.
Someone broke into your room and tried to do this to you. You didn't ask for this to happen. It's just, I hate thinking about that. So then fast forwarding a little bit, he ended up dropping out of high school in 9th grade. So I would guess, 14 years old?
You were
15?
Yeah, you're about 14. Depending on when you're born, you're about 14, 15, because your sophomore year, you're turning 16.
You get your driver's license, yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking, too. So 14, 15, he drops out of high school, and then we, like, kind of skip to the age of 22, where he moves to California and settles permanently. So that's where our California story ties in, and everyone knows that the Night Stalker is in California. If you are into true crime, that's a pretty obvious statement.
But what's scary is that time that's undocumented. God knows what that kid would have done in that undocumented time.
Right, exactly. And that's I think I've tried to look and see, and no one really seems to know what's happening those 7 years. Like, I think more of it comes to light later, and they obviously assume, like, you don't just go one night and are like, hey, I'm gonna go murder someone. You don't just hit to that immediately.
Well, yeah.
You kind of build up to it.
Well, if he dropped out of high school, or didn't even start high school freshman year,
yeah,
you're going back to serial killer homeschool.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
And you've got, well, Peeping Tom and Murderer, which make the perfect serial killer team.
Yeah, and then his dad that beats the shit out of him all the time.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, and then also, when he was a child, it doesn't say this in here, but I know this is really important. I know it's important because they talk about it a lot on My Favorite Murder podcast. They talk about it all the time, where a lot of murderers actually have traumatic head injuries as children. They were, like, dropped on their head, or they hit their head, or they busted open, or something like that. He actually had that happen to him twice as a child. He, like, busted his head open.
Yeah.
And depending on where the injury is, it could actually, I can't remember where it is in the brain, but depending on where the damage is done, if it mm-hmm. hits that part of the lobe, that controls your emotions.
Exactly.
And makes you heartless, and you're just...
Because you don't feel remorse. You don't feel sorry for anything. You don't feel guilt. You can't feel love or compassion for anything. Like, and that's the thing about what is a sociopath. That's the definition of a sociopath or psychopath. They're different. But one of them, they feel no emotion. Like, they can't... They don't feel empathy. I think it's sociopath. We have smartphones.
See, and I think it's psychopath, but I'll tell you in a second.
Mandy's going to tell us. All right, well, I'll continue with this while you look that up. There is a couple different ones. So this is now we're going to kind of get into the murders. And when I tell you there's a lot, I'm not going to go through the details of all of them because they're all very similar. But I will tell you all of their names because I think it's really important to recognize the victims' names other than just the murderer. So on April 10th, 1984, Ramirez murders a 9-year-old girl. Her name is Mei Lung. She is in the basement of a hotel where he was living at the time in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco. He rapes and beats this girl before stabbing her to death and hanging her body from a pipe. She was 9.
Holy shit.
He was 24.
Absolutely not.
Like...
Absolutely not.
What? I just don't understand... I know we just talked about not having emotions and, like, not being able to feel empathy. What it takes for someone to be that awful of a person. Like, what compels you to ever want to harm a child? I don't care if you don't have any emotion. I don't understand what it would take for you to have to harm a child. So, he actually wasn't identified for this crime at first. They didn't think it was him. But in 2009, his DNA was matched to a sample DNA from the crime scene. So, they believe that it was him. But it took, that was 84, it took 20 years for them to figure that out. That it was actually him. Then on June 28th, this is kind of where we get into the spree. So on June 28th, 1984, Jeannie Vincow, she's a 79-year-old woman, was found brutally murdered in her apartment in Los Angeles. She'd been stabbed repeatedly while asleep in her bed, and her throat was slashed so deeply that she was almost decapitated. That's how bad it was. Then the next one, March 17th, 1985, so we have almost a year in between that time. He attacked 22-year-old Maria Hernandez outside of her home in Rosemead, California. And this time, he used a gun. Then, within an hour of that Rosemead, inside the house was her roommate, who heard the gunshots and ducked behind a counter. When she saw Ramirez enter the kitchen, when she raised her head, he shot her once in the forehead. So, that's two. Within the hour of that happening, he pulled a 30-year-old... Well, I'm not going to say this correctly. Tsai Lin Yu. They have Veronica Yu out of her car. And Monterey Park, California, shot her twice with a handgun and fled. She was pronounced dead when they arrived at the hospital. On March 27th, so within 10 days, 1985, he entered the home and burglarized in Whittler, California, 2 a.m. He murdered two people in this one. Charles Zazara, Z-A-Z-Z-A-R-A, Zazara, age 64, and his wife, Maxine Lavinia Zazara, who was age 44. So that's heavy. May 14th, 1985, he returned to Monterey Park, entered the home of Bill Doy, 66, and his disabled wife Lillian, who was 56. Surprising Doy in his bedroom, he shot him in the face with his pistol, and as Doy went for his own handgun, he, after beating the mortally wounded man into unconsciousness, so basically, he went to go reach for his handgun and he shot him. Then he went into Lillian's bedroom, bound her, raped her, killed her. On the night of May 29th, 1985, Ramirez drove a stolen car to Monrovia, California, and stopped at the house of Mabel Bell, 83, and her disabled sister, Florence Lang, 81. Finding a hammer in the kitchen, he bludgeoned and bound Lang in her bedroom, then did the same to Bell. The women were found 2 days later alive, but in comas, and Bell later died of her injuries. The next day, he drove to Burbank, snuck into the home of Carol Kyle, 42, and then at gunpoint, he bound Kyle and her 11-year-old son with handcuffs and ransacked the house. He released Kyle to direct him to where the family valuables were, and then, obviously, raped her repeatedly, as one does when you're a fucking psychopath. Then on July 2nd, 1985, he drove a stolen car to Arcadia, California, randomly selected the house of Mary Louise Cannon, 75. July 5th, 1985, broke into the home of Sierra Madre, California, and bludgeoned 16-year-old Whitney Bennett with a tire iron as she slept in her bedroom. Then July 7th, so 2 days later, Ramirez burglarized the home of Joyce Lucille Nelson, 61, finding her asleep on the couch. This one actually is where they found the shoe print of his sneakers outside the window that was actually able to help them connect to all these crimes. Then on July 20th, 1985, this is the part that, like, I distinctly remember listening to watching Bailey Sarian's video and her talking about this. He purchased a machete. Because that's a normal thing that people purchase.
I mean, in Florida, yes. But we're in California, so no.
Yeah, that's like the biggest red flag you can get.
Exactly. That's what she was talking about. She's like, someone just walks up and says, yeah, I want to buy this machete. And you're like, hold on, what's happening here? Like, who the fuck are you going to murder with this thing? Because that's like, why do you need that?
Actually.
Hold on.
To be fair, when we lived in Illinois, I had a roommate, and we went on this trip to Missouri as our spring break trip. And we stopped at this antique store, and on the way back, he bought a machete.
Jesus Christ.
And what did he use it for?
Murder?
To try and kill mosquitoes. Yeah, murder of mosquitoes.
I just want to say, I feel like having a machete is any welcome to the state of Florida kit in any of the swamp areas. Like, some mosquito repellent, a machete, like, and depending on where you are. Depending on where you are in the swamps. Get you one of those nice airboats so you can at least make your way around the swamps.
Yes.
I've always wanted to ride on one of those.
An airboat?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's fun.
I think you can.
Oh, no, you can.
Everglades.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way,
a little south.
I looked up the definition, and apparently they're the same. So.
Oh, they are.
Psychopath, sometimes considered synonymous with sociopath, is traditionally a personality disorder characterized by persistent antisocial behavior, impaired empathy and remorse, and bold, disinhibited, and egotistical traits. And sociopath is pretty much the same. An adult who has a personality disorder marked by antisocial behavior, a person with an antisocial personality disorder exhibiting antisocial behavior that usually is the result of social and environmental factors in the person's early life.
Hmm. So if I understand that correctly, it's the upbringing that causes the difference between what a socio and a psycho is.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
This is so heavy. I'm sorry. There's more. This is real heavy. Before the machete was purchased, there was another, he chose the home of Sophia Dickman, who was 63. And I feel like it's really convenient that he's choosing really elderly people.
They can't fight, well, probably doesn't think they can fight back.
Yeah, but supposedly all these are random. They're very random attacks, but they all happen to be really old people that can't fight back, or can't, I mean, I'm sure they could, but, like, can't really defend themselves.
I mean, he probably used his, homeschool
Peeping
learnings
Tom.
To Peeping Thomas and...
I mean, I would imagine, but still.
It could still be random in case the house at the same time, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So this one, Sophia Dickman, when he went through and was trying to steal all of her jewelry, when she swore to him that he'd taken everything, he told her to swear on Satan. Because, again, the Satanism, Satan's telling him to do this, and he has to murder all these people and rape all these people because of this. Okay, so now back to purchasing the machete. He drives a stolen Toyota to Glendale, California, and he chose the home of Layla Needing, who's 66, and her husband Maxon, who's 68. He burst into their bedroom, hacked them with a machete, and then killed them with shots to the head with a handgun. Because the machete bludgeoning wasn't enough. They also had to be shot in the head. Which is just ridiculous. Then... I believe it's that same day, at approximately 4:15 a.m., he breaks into the home of, oh god, I'm not going to be able to say this, the Kovanath family? K-H-O-V-A-N-A-N-T-H. Kovanath?
I'm going to go, yeah, maybe?
Kovanath family. Someone please correct me nicely if I'm wrong. He shot the sleeping Chanarog Kovanath in the head with the 25 caliber. Then... It doesn't say if this was a wife, a daughter, but beat Soam Kid Kovanath, and he bound the couple's terrified 8-year-old son before dragging Soam Kid around the house to reveal the locations of any valuable items that he stole. And then, of course, he, during this entire assault, demands that she swear to Satan that he was not hiding any money from him. But it doesn't sound like he murdered the 8-year-old boy in this one. He just bound them, left them in the house. Because he didn't kill all of his victims.
True.
He was the Night Stalker. He murdered some of them, but most of what he did was rape. He's convicted for more counts of rape than murder. That's not true, actually. I'm sorry. It's 13 counts of murder, 11 counts of sexual assault. Forgive me. But anyway, we have, I believe, five more victims. Yeah. On August 6, 1985, he drove to Northridge, California, and broke into the home of Chris and Virginia Peterson. He crept into their bedroom, startling Virginia in 27 and shot her in the face with a handgun, then shot Chris in the neck because he attempted to flee. The couple did actually survive. They survived their injuries. On August 8, 1985, Ramirez drove a stolen car to Diamond Bar, California, and chose the home of Sakina Abawath, 27, and her husband Elias Abawath, 31. And sometime after 2:30, he entered the house and went to the master bedroom. He instantly killed the sleeping Elias with a shot to the head, and he handcuffed and beat Sakina while forcing her again to reveal the location of family jewels and the expensive items in their house. He did the same thing. Their 3-year-old son entered the bedroom hearing all of this. He tied him up, but did not harm him in any other way. Well, other than mentally, because he forced him to watch him rape his mother, so that would be a lot of therapy for me. At this time, media is going crazy. The media is actually the ones that named him the Night Stalker. So they're following all these crimes. They realize that he's, you know, where he's at, kind of doing all these things. There are 4 other victims in this as well. It's awful. The list just keeps going. I don't understand.
So wait, we said this all started when he was 22, correct?
Yes.
And we have a gap of about 6 to 7 years that we don't know anything about. Mm-hmm. And you said he had a good amount of killings within 10 days. So normally when stuff like that happens is, so we've already know he's been bred to be a serial killer. We already know this. There's no question about being bred for this. I'm wondering, in that 6-year gap while being bred to when he comes out when he's 22, if something happened, which is not uncommon, something to have happened in the home life or something to someone close to him or whatever, that finally lights the spark and then triggers this. Like, the fact that he did so many within 10 days, he's enraged. He's mad. There's something that's just, he needs to get out of his system and proceeds to do what he does to get out of his system.
Right.
Which we all know is wrong, but doesn't slow down. But now at this point, we've already, you know, how do I say this? We've broken through the shell. There's no fear anymore. There's no nervousness about what we're doing. We're doing it.
Yep.
We've done this many in 10 days. We're not nervous anymore. And now, we didn't start off with robbery, but we've gone to robbery now. But now on top of this, we've gone from, hey, we're doing robbery, but now I need you to swear to Satan.
Yeah.
Everything's starting to escalate as I feel like he's now discovered that, or in his mind, this is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's trying to figure out his MO. How is he doing this? How does he...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, look at most serial killers. And I know you've studied a lot into the... Because you're very much into the serial.
Yeah.
And you know, how often do you see where they start... The first one's always the sloppiest. The first one is...
Yep.
It either make or breaks you. You either get caught right then and there.
Yeah.
Or you're going to get away with this for a while.
And you're going to keep going.
It definitely has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First one's always going to be your messiest one. But you learn, you build, you grow. And that is what we're seeing here. He's been building and learning and growing.
Right.
Because, I mean, how many deaths are we into 85 now? You said we get at least 11 counts of rape, 13 counts of murder.
Mm-hmm. He's convicted of.
And you're right, convicted of.
Yeah.
But as I said, we already know there's a 6-year to 7-year gap.
Yep.
Tell me we weren't practicing on the basics, animals and whatever you can think of.
Yep. The homicidal triad.
Yep.
Or not homicidal. Is that what it's called? The homicidal triad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm assuming something finally triggered, something finally snapped.
Yep.
And he finally, you know, after that first initial one.
Yeah.
Since it didn't break him, but it made him, he has that taste, and every one after that, he's trying to become his own man. Yeah. You know, like.
Or the first one, because generally it's like, no matter what it is, whether it's this or whether it's the first time you smoke weed or, like, anything that you do, the first time you do it is always the best. And then every time after that, you're trying to chase that high or, like, you know, get that same feeling. But you can't because it's not, like, that first thing. That's what they talk about in a lot of psychology books and a lot of shows like that.
Which, I mean, you're completely right. Look at skydivers.
Yeah.
Thrill seekers. I mean, personally,
that's a good comparison. I mean, not smoking weed,
but no, for me personally, I am a thrill seeker.
Yeah.
I remember jumping out of that plane, and as I jumped out, for that first moment when you jumped out, I couldn't breathe.
Oh, I bet.
I literally couldn't breathe, and I was trying to breathe, but after I took a second, closed my eyes, I'm like, okay, calm down, and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this again, and it was just, and then I could.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the way you down, you're just like screaming, hooting, hollering, you're having a great time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, MW can attest, I've always been a thrill seeker.
Yeah.
I don't stop. I'm always, what's the next big thing?
Right.
Sadly, due to COVID, it prevented me from a couple thrill seeking experiences this year, which, I was supposed to be going to New Zealand this year. And, Travel Channel's obviously shown it. I can't even think of all the different channels you've seen it. Heck, movies even use this location. I can't remember where New Zealand is, but there's a giant bungee drop. And because it's so huge and iconic, most people have seen it and not realized that's which one I'm talking about.
Hmm.
And I was supposed to be going out to New Zealand to meet a girlfriend of mine. And she's like, hey, I've done it. You want to go? I was like, yes, I do.
That's awesome.
I'm like, scared the heck out of me to even think that I was going to do it. But I was like, let's go.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I'm not a thrill seeker. I am a baby.
But no, thrill seekers get that high.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You're absolutely right. It's that same kind of, that same mentality, I guess, obviously in a different sense, but
yeah.
But yeah, to talk about the timeline. So April 10th, 1984, His first one that they officially connected him to was June 28th, 1984. But then in the 2000s, they found that DNA for the first one of the 9-year-old girl.
So you're thinking of this way. So you said April 1984.
Mm-hmm.
What was the last one you just told me? It was July of 85?
The actual last one is August. It is 1985. I'm trying to find the exact date.
But the point is, we're...
I believe it's August 24th.
But we're over a year into this.
Yep.
We are literally over a year into this, yep. And he's not stopped. He hasn't slowed down. No, part of the motive or MO has changed over the time.
Right.
But then
machete,
also...
machete, handgun.
Well,
he's got to figure out his thing.
Well, it's not even that. Think of it this way. If you've been unemployed this whole entire time, which most likely he has been...
Because he's been stealing jewels for money, stealing cars to get around.
Yeah, so how far were we when we started stealing jewels? Because at that point, okay, let's say he had a savings account, or maybe somebody had money set for him. You're going to eventually run out.
Exactly.
So now we're picking up the MO of we need to start stealing valuables, because if we don't have money to pay for stuff. Or, in some cases with serial killers... the money is an added bonus to the thrill and the high of what has happened.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Sometimes serial killers won't even spend the money or the jewels or whatever, or take it to a pawn shop. They hold on to it. They won't spend it, use it, or anything. It's just looking at them gives that high again.
Yeah, it's like when we talked about Tennessee, when he robbed all of those places,
with
they found
the
jars.
Drive-thru killer.
Yeah. They found all those jars of coins and stuff that he had stolen.
He didn't spend them.
Yeah,
he didn't use them.
Now, in some cases, they are, but obviously, like, I remember that case because I was a little bit older than MW when that happened.
Yeah.
I very much remember how, like...
terrified everyone was?
It's a lot about the trophies, too. Like, the money could have been the trophy.
I feel like, though, maybe in his case, like, if you think about his upbringing, I think the first one is probably more probable. He was running out of cash at that point because...
yeah, I
he's
agree.
He's either, I want you to swear on Satan, or I need this money.
Yeah.
And looking at his lifestyle and the fact that he was so swear on Satan, probably that he was running out of cash.
I can understand the running out of the cash. I feel like also looking back at the fact that he watched it was the older brother, not cousin, right? Or was it brother?
It was cousin.
Sorry.
His cousin,
He watched his older cousin drop down an insanity plea and got, and it said, especially in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
A lot of states, you drop the insanity plea, you're cleared like that. Texas, they don't even play that game in Texas. So he gets away with it, though. Part of me thinks more of the Satan is the insanity plea as the backup if I get caught to get out like his cousin did in four years.
Yeah.
Compared to, I'm saying this when I'm getting the money. I just feel like that's how...
I don't think he's saying it when he's getting the money. I think the I believe in Satan thing is one side of that coin, and the other side of that is my dad was shitty. I was raised by two horrible people, one who almost went to jail. They're not exactly rolling in the dough.
Oh, no.
Right.
So he needs to pick up different cars to be anonymous because they've already got his footprint.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's going to need them.
Which he does find out.
Yeah.
Because it's on the news. They say that they found his footprint and those sneakers he throws off the Golden Gate Bridge.
And that,
and they're so heightened by everything because everyone's freaked out. It's all in the news.
Yep.
But that's one of the things that irritates me because I did actually study journalism. I actually was going to go to SIU Carbondale to study journalism before we moved to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember studying journalism in high school, and that was one of the things that irritate me is how many times have we seen in cases where the media has slipped up and has actually helped the suspect than anything else. You've hindered the investigation than helped it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, I have respect for the whole integrity piece.
Yeah.
But sometimes, how many times have we seen integrity thrown out a window?
Right.
And it annoys me very much.
No, I get that. I get that. Just in the sense of that I said I wanted to say all the victims' names, I won't go into details what happened. But on August 18th, 1985, Peter and Barbara Pan. Also, in that same August 24th, 1985, in Los Angeles... oh, wait, I'm sorry, 76 miles south of Los Angeles. He arrived at the home of James Romero Jr., who they'd returned home from a family vacation, actually. They had just gotten back. After this, he broke into the house of Bill Carnes, 30, and his fiancée, Inez Erickson, 29, through the back door. Obviously, what had happened there, like I said, I feel like we've talked a lot about that, and I don't. It's really sad. But I want the victims' names to be remembered, because I think that's important.
I think what scares me the most about this, because I'm so focused on the story, but then it just hit me right now, because as we're saying 1985, I was like, wait a second. had, so this is all Central California. I recognize a lot of the names you're telling me.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I'm sitting here going, I recognize a lot of these names. I've been to a lot of these places.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here going, man, like, I would love to put this on a map. Just going, man, the amount of gas you wasted or whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm also looking at this. You're in Central Cali. If mm-hmm. you're from California, it's not just SoCal, NoCal. Like, there's a Central Cali. It's like here in Florida. It's not Northern, Southern. There's a Central Florida. Like, we live in Central Florida.
Right.
Had he just moved 8 hours north? He started in April of 84. I was born January of 85.
Yeah.
That's a little bit scary for me.
Right. It could have been, like, your family.
Like, I just, it just is weird to think about that.
Yeah. And, like, comparison to yourself. Yeah.
I just, like, yeah. I didn't even think about that until just now. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, it's creepy.
It is.
They, you know, they have that footprint. They found the car he stole on August 28th at the Wilshire Center in Los Angeles. Police obtained a single fingerprint from the rearview mirror of that car, despite his careful efforts to wipe the car clean of all of his prints. They did find one. So the print was positively ID'd as belonging to him. So now they have a guy. They know who they're looking for. So at this point, he was described as a 25-year-old drifter from Texas with a really long rap sheet that included many arrests for traffic and drug violations. They had, like, known it was him for all of these, but now they have a name and they're seeing this long rap sheet that he has. So they decide to release to the media a mugshot of him from December 12th, 1984, which is an arrest for auto theft. And the Night Stalker, finally he had a face. So he was more than just a name, he was a face now. At the police conference, they said, "We know who you are now, and soon everyone else will. There will be no place you can hide." On April 30th, 1985, Ramirez took a bus to Tucson, Arizona to visit his brother, unaware that he had become the lead story in virtually every major newspaper and television news program across California. After failing to meet his brother, he returned to Los Angeles early on the morning of August 31st. He walked past police officers who were staking out the bus terminal in hopes of catching the killer should he attempt to flee on an outbound bus and into a convenience store in East Los Angeles. After noticing a group of elderly Mexican women fearfully identifying him as El Matador or the killer, Ramirez saw his face on the front pages of the newspaper rack and fled the store in a panic. He attempted to carjack a woman, but was chased away by bystanders who pursued him, and after hopping over several fences and attempting two more carjackings, he was eventually subdued by a group of residents, one of whom had struck him over the head with a metal bar in the pursuit, and the group held Ramirez down and relentlessly beat him until the police arrived and took him into custody.
Hell yes.
So he was literally taken by, you know, just regular people.
I would applaud that. Now, nowadays, if you don't know that story, it might look bad.
Right.
But, no, I applaud them for what they did.
Absolutely.
Fuck yeah.
He tried and failed 3 carjackings because of other people that were around.
Yeah.
Because other people saw him try to carjack, and they're like, no, fuck you, get away, like, go away. And he just kept running into this, like, neighborhood where people finally caught him.
Because at this point, everyone's tired of being afraid. Everyone's tired of having to hide in their homes and be scared of a boogeyman.
Exactly.
We have a face to said boogeyman, and I don't have to be afraid of you anymore.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. But, so this is almost done. We're just getting into the trial and conviction. So in his first court appearance, he, on his hand, drew a pentagram and yelled, Hail Satan, in the courtroom. I believe there's video evidence of that also.
Oh my gosh.
So if you want to look that
sanity
up, I'm
plea.
Pretty sure. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the insanity plea now.
Yeah. And then in July, or in August 3rd, 1988, the Los Angeles Times reported that some jail employees overheard Ramirez planning to shoot the prosecutor with the gun, which Ramirez intended to have smuggled into the courtroom. I chuckle because that's so implausible.
It's not even that. It's in this.
Yeah.
Who does he think is coming to help him at this point?
Well, actually, hold on. I wouldn't say it's completely, I mean, back then.
Back then it was probable. If you
right.
had somebody who would help
yeah,
you.
Because apparently at the time they didn't have, well, that's. They didn't have metal detectors in courthouses like they do now.
Yeah.
So, but because they heard that, they installed metal detectors in the courthouse and, like, started searching people in the courthouse, which they do in all courthouses now.
He's really trying to work that insanity plea, though.
He is. And then on August 14th, the trial was interrupted because one of the jurors, Phyllis Singletary, did not arrive at the courtroom. Later that day, she was found shot to death in her apartment. And they, like, thought that it was connected to him, but it actually had no connection to him. He was not responsible for it at all. She was shot and killed by her boyfriend, who later committed suicide in a hotel.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So it was just like...
a random circumstance.
Yeah. That was just... it got a lot of people really freaked out.
So there's no video, but there are articles about it. Like from 1985.
Yeah.
October 25th, 1985 in Los Angeles Times.
Yeah. That's so on September 20th, 1989. So... 4 years after he was captured, he was convicted of all charges, 13 counts of murder, 5 attempted murders, 11 sexual assaults, and 14 burglaries. During the penalty phase of the trial on November 7, 1989, he was sentenced to die in California's gas chamber. He stated to reporters after the death sentence, big deal, death always went with the territory, and then said, see you in Disneyland. That was literally his last, his, like, parting quotes.
Jesus.
Yeah. At the time, it was, the trial cost $1.8 million and was the most expensive in the history of California until the O.J. Simpson murder case in 1994.
I was gonna say.
I mean, this was in the 80s, so at the time, it was the most expensive one. Yeah. The thing about this that drives me absolutely crazy, he got married while he was in prison. Because serial killers have fans. And most of those fans are women, which I think is disgusting. I can't say, because, like, I'm not idolizing him, but I'm, like, fascinated by him.
It's Mason all over again.
Yeah, but I wouldn't, like, try
or
to...
Manson, sorry.
Manson, yeah, I knew what you meant. That I would... I don't know, like, you know what I mean? Like, I just am fascinated by how these people are crazy. It doesn't mean I'm in love with this person. I'm not gonna go marry him. But they wrote him letters. They paid him visits. In 1985, Doreen Loy wrote him 75 letters during his incarceration. In 1988, Ramirez proposed to her. And October 3rd, 1996, they were married in California's San Quentin State Prison. Yep. She did eventually leave him, though. And by the time of his death, Ramirez was engaged to a 23-year-old female writer.
Wasn't he, like, 50?
Yeah.
Once again, not uncommon.
I know, but still.
Yeah. I don't support these. It's just, but you hear about it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if he had not have gotten cancer, he would still be alive right now. By some estimates, he would have been in his early 70s before his execution was carried out due to California's lengthy appeals process. Ugh. So he would still have been alive right now. Yep. So, but he did try to appeal.
Of course.
Obviously. That didn't go through very well. But it wasn't until 2006 he had tried to appeal, actually, when it was denied by California Supreme Court.
It was a long wait.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it's a long wait. He just probably didn't have a attorney that would be willing to help him with that appeal.
That's fair.
That could be true. But yeah, so back to our nurture nature thing. They talk about mental health in this article as well. And they say that Ramirez is a made psychopath as opposed to a born one. Because some people are born with that, you know, they don't have empathy.
Yeah,
they
can't.
Yeah. But he was made, obviously, because of what we talked about. But yeah, he died with complications with B-cell lymphoma at Marion General Hospital in Greenbury, California on June 7th, 2013. He was 53 years old, and he had been on death row for more than 23 years.
No. There's... And see, this goes into the debate of the death penalty. And
right.
For me, you have so much evidence lined against you that you straight up did this. This one's, I'm like, no, just go ahead.
See, I don't know if
feed him to the sharks.
Right. I don't know if it's about that or the fact that they have so many and they can only... I don't know what the politics are behind the death penalty. Like, if they can only do so many a year or, like, how much it costs.
It depends on your state.
Right. Because each state has different rules and different regulations for it. But
some of it is they have to give you amount of time to appeal.
Right.
And then...
you have plenty.
And I think that's California's thing. California gives you a long appeal process, which is why he didn't appeal 2006. So he had plenty of time to make all these appeals.
No, that makes sense. So, okay. Because now that just reminded me. So some states have it set to where you have until da-da-da time to put in an appeal. If you do not put in that appeal, that's it.
Yeah.
So if he waited since 2006, my money is on... his deadline was coming up.
It was like 25 years.
Yeah. And to extend it...
yeah.
put down the appeal.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will wait until the last minute, and then they start putting down appeals.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them, now bear with you, some have done it, and they were wrongfully accused, but they would have, they wait because they're waiting for the technology to exist to prove that they are innocent.
Right.
Which there have been cases that has exactly happened. And right. There's one in particular, I can't think of the case, but I remember the gentleman.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, and literally, I can't remember how long he was in for, but he was accused of a woman's murder, and waited out, and finally when the technology came out, went to his attorney, said, hey, I want this appealed, I know the technology exists, and sure enough,
he was proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And the state had to pay a lot of reparations.
Yup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's, so that's Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, friends. What a fucking horrible human being.
Alright, so for mine, I chose Queen Mary. I've heard a lot about it being haunted growing up. I think we even drove by it maybe once or twice when we came down to visit you. But I never really knew, like, the story behind it. So I was really interested in to see, like, what it was that makes it haunted and why it was such a big deal to go and see the ship. We were actually supposed to go visit it this past September, but, you know, COVID.
I was just going to ask. Queen Mary's a ship, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like... wait, hold on.
It's a ship that's been permanently docked and being used as a resort now.
Okay. Yeah. Is it a naval ship or, like, an old, like, wooden ship? Or are you going to explain it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's been multiple things during
Sorry, I have a lot of questions. I talk a lot.
Excuse me, ma'am. Can you wait till the end and then raise your hand?
Please hold all of your questions until the end of the presentation. Thank you.
So... during its sailing years, the ship has been seen by many people, everything and everyone, from just a regular person coming aboard to enjoy a cruise ship, troops, German prisoners of war, Queen Elizabeth, multiple trips from Winston Churchill, and even Walt Disney in 1951 to attend the European premiere of Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, cool.
Right? So I feel like all of our stories have had some sort of other connection from one side or another, like yours, Mandy, with the Grand Floridian, and then you two with, like, American Horror Story. So.
Well, I was going on the Disney bit because
I also mentioned Disneyland. Too.
Disney is the underlying theme right now.
Because Ramirez is a jackass.
It all comes back to the house.
Yeah.
So, as far as its history, it's named after the actual Queen Mary, and it's about twice the size of the Titanic. It was one of the fastest ships, so it won the Blue Ribbon for fastest North Atlantic crossing on its sixth round-trip voyage in August of 1936, I believe, again in 1938, and then I believe it won it another time after that. But so it's definitely got the notoriety of being one of the biggest ships, one of the fastest ships during that time period. But it was completed in the 1930s, and was completed. Its maiden voyage was done from Southampton, England, May 27th, 1936. On June 1st of that year, it arrives in Pier 90 in New York. In August of 1939, it makes its last peacetime voyage for now, carrying 2,552 passengers. So now we start with World War II. Queen Mary is retrofitted to serve as a troop ship, so crew members black out the ship's portholes, it's painted gray, and it's known as the Gray Ghost. So during this time frame, obviously, is when we see the troops, including the 1st Armored Infantry Division, prisoners of war, and then, like I said, multiple trips from Winston Churchill aboard the ship.
And some foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Got it.
Of course, we'll get to the haunted side of that, but there will be portions of that that obviously will come back to this. After World War II, at about 1945, armaments are removed from ships except for a 6-inch gun, for some reason. Funnels are repainted in canard colors. 1946...
Sorry, I'm laying down. I'm going to lay down to write all my questions.
You good. So 1946, six war bride voyages transporting 12,886 European brides and children to the United States and Canada.
The Union sent that to Mike. It's supposed to be one of the things that you put your mask on behind your neck. It's really stiff and it doesn't move, though, so it's really uncomfy. Ugh. Sorry, I just saw you noticing it because I love that thing too. I want to put it on display. This is 2020 in a nutshell.
Right? Oh my gosh.
Not the baby shark enchant of 2019 that brings open the black hole of hell.
Wait, but it's okay because now there's a Santa baby shark. So all of it should be ending.
Wait, there's a Santa baby shark? Oh fuck. Yeah. Can my microphone even pick me up? I don't even know if you can hear me. Hold on.
Oh, God.
Let me move this closer. Okay, we're good.
Okay. So,
I'm a mess, sorry.
So, like you said, it was 6 war bride voyages and then 7 war bride voyages transporting European brides and children to Canada. 10 stowaways were discovered on the first crossing. And then September 24th to the 27th makes its final military voyage from Halifax to Southampton. July 31st, first post-war voyage to depart Southampton and goes to New York with 1,897 passengers, 1,280 crew members under the command of Commodore Illingworth.
So it's mainly a passenger ship.
Yeah, so it went through all of that with World War II. It did its, you know, all it was supposed to do, did a couple more stops, and then now we're going back to...
And so it survived World War II and...
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, with some bumps and bruises,
of
but...
Of course, but...
Yeah.
Got it. Sorry, I'm just trying to...
No,
you know, it takes me a while. I'm slow.
Yeah, so now they're retrofitting and trying to get back into the cruise mentality. February 15th to May 3rd of 1947 is when they start working to restore everything back to factory settings.
Okay,
if you will.
Back to factory settings. I like
it.
All right.
George Dry Dock. Then in 1966 in April, Cunard announces Queen Mary is for sale. And in 1967, July 27th, a $3.45 million bid is accepted by Long Beach, or made from Long Beach, and they've accepted it. And again, keep in mind, so from July 27th to Halloween, October 31st, it takes before it departs from Southampton to make its final voyage to Long Beach, California. So it takes all of that time for them to finally be like, okay, we're going to send you the ship. Now that you've given me $3.45, now you can have your boat back. It doesn't get there until December 9th. And then, once it arrives in Long Beach, California, then in 1971, it's moved to Pier J. And then, now, at this point is where they're starting to talk about its history and trying to make it a little bit more touristy.
Okay.
May 8th, Queen Mary's Story and Powertrain Tour, and upper decks are opened on weekends. December 11th, they start a Living Seas Portion Museum that opens. November 2nd of 1972... they opened the first 150 hotel room. 1976, Queen Mary Tour Inc. takes over, so operating the Museum of the Sea. And then in 1980, September 1st, another subsidiary corporation signs a 66-year lease to manage the Queen Mary and the adjoining area.
What a random number of years.
Yeah.
66-year lease. Okay.
They were already prepared for all the scary things. They wanted the 6-6.
Got it.
They just missed a 6.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I get it now.
So, and then, oddly enough, Howard Hughes' Spruce Goose flying boat opens to the public next to Queen Mary. And now, of course, if you haven't had enough of Disney, March 29th, 1988, the Walt Disney Company buys Rather Corporation for $152 million, which is the company that had just taken over Queen Mary. The agreement includes the Disneyland Hotel and the management of the Queen Mary and the Spruce Goose property.
All right, interesting.
I don't know why, but... 1992, City of Long Beach resumes responsibility for Queen Mary from the Port of Long Beach. March 6th, Disney advises the City of and Port of Long Beach that it will end its lease for the operation of the Queen Mary and Spruce Goose. The company agrees to operate the attraction until September 30th, 1992. Then on September 30th, it gives up its lease officially. Remainder of 1992, the Port of Long Beach becomes operator of property and looks for a new operator. So basically, this place has had absolute zero luck. It's
right.
Gone from hand to hand to hand, from nice fancy cruise ship, wartime, nice fancy cruise ship, everybody starts flying instead of going on boats, now to like, whoever will take it. Forget the 66-year lease, like, just whoever will take it. So, December 31st, Queen Mary closes, and again, this is all in 1992. Doesn't reopen again until February 5th of 1993. And the 26th of February is when it reopens to the public with self-guided and guided captain's tours. Most restaurants and Sunday brunch are back. It's not until March 5th where they reopen the first 125 rooms, as well as banquet rooms. And then on the 30th of April, the whole rest of it, the 365 rooms, are now officially reopened.
Okay.
at this point, now they're back to business doing everything from exhibits. So they have a celebration commemorating the ships take place for like the 50s, 75. Because at this point, we're like 90 or 91 years, I believe. At one point, they have an exhibit for the Titanic. They have another one for Princess Diana.
Princess Diana.
Little yeah. Queen. So now, this is, well, pre-COVID. You were able to stay in all of the rooms. You could get married aboard the ship, host other events, including your prom. And then from late September to the end of October, they did Queen Mary's Harbor, Dark Harbor. Now, as far as the rooms, they're pretty much kind of like the standard cruise rooms that you would think of, like with the veranda and all that, with the exception of they're a little bit larger. They're still like the wood paneling and everything, kind of staying true to its roots a little bit.
That's pretty.
The only room that kind of stands out that, like, when you're looking at their website, it'll list all the different rooms, and the only one that's separated is room B340. So the description for this room is large volume of recorded paranormal activity with many stories of haunted encounters noted in the ship's logs. Reports date back to the final ocean voyage in 1967 and include complaints from guests staying in B340 claiming that someone was knocking on the door in the middle of the night. Other complaints include bathroom lights turning on by themselves, the sink faucet turning on and off on its own, and unexplained bathroom doors shutting. Are you brave enough to stay?
Interesting.
So
you two are. I'm not.
Oh, I'm. I'm so I'm psyched. I'm so psyched.
Stupid COVID. We could have been there.
You guys are cut from the same cloth. You can tell you're related.
Well, here's the thing. She keeps when she mentions the COVID trip. So the COVID trip or pre-COVID trip was we were looking at Disneyland for 2 days, and then driving up 8 hours, stopping in San Jose to do the Winchester Mystery House, then going up
the
to
the Winchester Mystery House. That's the one I just made the movie about, right?
I mean, that one has a lot of freaking movies.
They
did make a newer movie.
I was going to say, they just made the one. It's the Winchester guns.
Yeah.
And the house that she had to keep adding on to the house lock away the spirits or whatever.
Someone had convinced her that the reason that all of her family had died was the spirits of people had died after
being shot
by the gun.
Yeah.
So she was told if she continued to build on to the house, the spirits wouldn't be able to find her. So there's rooms that there's
lead
a door
to
that
nowhere.
Goes to nothing.
Yeah. You go out that door, you're dead.
Yeah, it's like, oh, by the way, here's the drop-off.
Yeah.
And she just kept building and building and building.
But yeah, so wait, I said that wrong. So it was supposed to be 2 days at Disney, maybe three, depending on how we wanted to do it.
Let's be honest, the only reason we were going was for Star Wars Celebration because, again, we're nerds.
Okay, so it was Star Wars...
But it was also Disneyland. Yeah. Huge Disneyland.
Yeah, so it was supposed to be Star Wars Celebration, Disneyland, then Queen Mary, since it's right there.
Yeah.
Then drive up 8 hours to San Jose, stop at the Winchester Mystery House, and then drive the next hour, hour and a half, traffic pending, and then do Alcatraz. So we were going to knock out three of the haunted sites.
That'd have been cool.
But, you know, COVID. So COVID screwed up New Zealand and the California trip.
Right?
Okay.
The California trip would have been awesome.
2022, we're doing Celebration.
Yep, I'm so excited.
But, yeah, so after all this time, it's why did this have so much turnover and why is it supposedly haunted? Well, one of the things that you see, if you watch any of the videos on YouTube, you know, like we've been talking about, you will find so many things on YouTube that, you know, even if you don't find anything, you still get to see the interiors of those places. And one of the things I noticed is there was like a blue plaque and it had a list of all of the people who had died.
Okay.
That potentially being the reason for a lot of the turnover. But really the deaths that they mainly talk about would be Sir Edgar Britton in 1936, who was the first captain of Queen Mary, dies of a stroke in his cabin.
Okay.
Off to a wonderful start. 1949, second officer William Stark accidentally drank laundry detergent out of a bottle that he thought was gin.
Oh, I remember that story.
Yeah, so he gets invited to go and get himself a drink, and for some reason, in the bottle of gin is laundry detergent. I guess he didn't think to, like, explain, like, oh, the bottle that looks like gin that has the X's on it? Don't drink that. Drink the other gin bottle. But, yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah. Now, going back to kind of the wartime stuff, so October 2nd, 1942, they were following a smaller boat, the HMS Curacao, and the HMS was kind of doing like a zigzag pattern so that they wouldn't be detected by like U-boats or something like that.
Right.
However, Queen Mary did not do the same thing. Queen Mary, being one of the fastest ships during that time period, caught up to it and split it in half.
Oh, got it.
So some were killed on impact, some drowned, some died due to hypothermia. The really sad part about it is that being, you know, the time period that it was, the Queen Mary was not allowed to stop and help the ship. So they had to report it to the British to have them come out, pick up the survivors. They didn't get there for like 2 hours. So out of everyone on that ship, maybe 99 people survived.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's like the USS Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering. I was like, I remember that story.
So... Jaws.
Oh, that's so wrong.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it is the shirt I'm wearing, and he does talk about it in that movie.
So, another one, and this... I'm sure that this is true and that there are facts to back it up, but this is one of those things that as soon as I heard about it, was like, this has got to be an urban legend. Like, this just is not... I can't.
I'm here for it.
During World War II, a cook dies after being shoved into an oven by an Australian soldier.
Oh, I've heard that one too, actually.
Hmm. Yeah. They put him in and turned it on.
So apparently when you go on tours, depending on who the tour guide is, because I know BuzzFeed has gone on there with Shane and Ryan.
Which is where I heard it. That's what I was watching this morning when I texted you.
That's funny.
Nuke's Top 5 has videos that have been sent in for that. And Ghost Hunters has gone out there. And depending on who's giving the tour, that has been brought up.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel like I remember Ghost Hunters going on a boat. I feel like I remember that episode.
They've done a couple, but I don't remember what season, because remember when I was trying to find what season for mine?
Yeah.
I remember in one of the seasons they talked about, because they went to they went to Queen Mary, and they went to something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember that story.
Didn't they do Alcatraz, too? I feel like they did Alcatraz, too.
Oh, yeah.
That actually might have been the same episode.
I think it was.
Because I remember they did two things in Cali that trip, and I think that was the other part of that trip.
I'm sure it's true, but in my head, I just like... Were you a bad cook? Did they think you were poisoning them? Like, how do you... I don't understand.
If I remember the story correctly, and I could be extremely wrong...
It was something about the food.
Yeah, he got really upset about something, and he was just like, I'm done.
It was something over the food that he just was like...
Hmm.
I don't know. It just seems like a horrible story,
I'm not that bad of a cook. Wouldn't know.
I can bake things. I can make pancakes and nachos. Those are the essentials.
Guess who fed her when we were growing up?
McDonald's. And Sonic and Burger King.
I cooked for you. Don't dare.
Oh, my goodness.
I still made the best mac and cheese you've ever had.
Did you say the best bag of cheese?
Mac and cheese.
I swear to God, you said bag of cheese. I was like...
Bitch fed me.
You just gave her a bag of fucking shredded cheese. Here you go.
Bon appetit. Okay. So, 1966... An 18-year-old crewman was crushed by door 13, which was an automatically closing door during a watertight drill.
Ooh, yep, remember that one.
And supposedly, so, like, the chef apparently can hear, like, moaning or whatever in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Him, they've actually said a lot of people have seen him as a ghost wearing white coveralls in that area.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So, some of the haunts, there's obviously not a lot of information about, like, the people that were on that, the RMS, but there are a couple of, I think there's, like, four or five that they don't really have a lot of information on or, like, a story or reasoning behind them.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them were two women drowned in first-class swimming pool, and then supposedly for their spirits, one is in, like, a 1930s attire and another is in 1960s clothing.
Hmm.
There is a little boy who fell overboard near the pool who haunts the passive way. And then another one who's really popular is a little girl named Jackie who also haunts the swimming pool areas.
Hmm. The pool ones I didn't hear of.
Yeah. The girl I've heard, like Jackie I've heard of. The little boy I don't think I've heard as much about. There's been, it was something on YouTube that I saw and I for life me can't remember who it was. But there was a video where... They think they see Jackie, the little girl, running by the pool as they're doing one of the tours.
Interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of that, and I really tried to book the Queen Mary the other day. Because they're not doing any showings, you can't really see what the pricing is. I know they listed, like, their parking fee, but that was pretty much it. I know if you're looking on YouTube, there are some videos of the Dark Harbor that they were doing from 2019. And it was partly on the ship, and a lot of it was, like, on the passing way and, like, the driving area. Unfortunately, kind of like with the Lent Mansion, it's it doesn't, from what I saw of it, it didn't really lean so much on its history. It was more of, like, a regular haunted house with, like, jump scares and stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's definitely a lot of good information. Honestly, the website itself, Queen Mary, BuzzFeed, Unsolved, Ghost Hunters, a lot of really good places to find some information and some videos.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely a really interesting thing to look up and something I really want to go on.
Yeah, that's cool. I would definitely, like, I like the, like, history side of that. Like, I would want to visit that because of the history of it. Like, same with Alcatraz. I'd want to go because of the history. But, like, I would not be willing to do, like, any sort of ghost tour or anything.
Just, I don't know. I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I just feel, so, like, me.
I know, but I know you'd be like.
No, not that I'm, like, scared, because I've done, like, a ghost tour and stuff, like, it wasn't even a ghost tour, we didn't fucking see anything spooky, or do anything spooky, but it was, if I feel like I was in, like, a real ghost tour, I just feel like I'm the type of person that, like, brings some shit home with me, because, like, I'm that, like, susceptible type of person.
Yeah.
So, I would be terrified that I would bring, like, a spirit or something home with me.
I know
that can't happen.
Yeah, like, I know sometimes you'll watch some of the people on YouTube that are, like, paranormal investigators, and, like, at the very end, they're like, you can't follow me home! Like, they're yelling at the ghost, like, you don't have permission to follow me home.
Yeah.
Bitch, I'm a ghost. I will do what I want.
Exactly. So, and that's the thing that, like, terrifies me. Like, that's why I won't do, like, ghost tours, like, anything like that, because I am terrified of something like that coming home with me. Even if it could be something that's, like, protective or...
I could see that.
Something, like, any sort of spirit like that. Because there's, one of the Disney influencers, one of the girls, I can't remember her name right now, but she has two spirits that follow her that are not related to her. She won't look in her rearview mirror when she's driving at night because she knows she'll see them. Like, that are always with her. And it's to the point where, like, she's gone and done things. And there was, like, I remember one of my friends was telling me about this. Because she was friends with this girl. And she went to, like, this restaurant with some of her friends. And she walked in the restaurant and just got really sick. Like, felt really ill. Like, she could barely keep her food down. She went outside, immediately felt better. So, like, there was something, like, either bad energy or bad spirit or something in that restaurant where she feels like it was her spirits telling her she needed to leave. Like, she couldn't be there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like, that kind of stuff, like, that freaks me out. I don't want that in my life.
But now I want to know, did anything happen when she left the room?
What do you mean?
Like, what happened if she felt bad enough to leave?
Like, she left the restaurant, like, it was, like, a restaurant she was in.
Yeah, so what happened in the restaurant when she walked out that she, like, what were the spirits trying to protect her from?
That's the thing, she doesn't know.
I want to know.
She doesn't know if there was like another like spirit there that was like bad or harmful or something like that, or that something bad was happening there.
Yeah.
Like it could have been anything. But she doesn't know what, at least I don't know. She might, but I don't know what it was. I just know that she was there and she felt awful. She went outside, felt better, went back in, started feeling really sick again. And then eventually left.
See, and I hate to say this, because then this is the debunking part of me. Because, I mean, if they're real, they're real.
Yeah.
But there's so many times where we mistake something like that, and it's not. And, like, one of the things I really loved about Ghost Hunters back in the day when it originally started was they did not play with that. And one of the things that they realized is most people don't realize, depending on how your house is made, especially if it's made, like, back in the 60s or 70s, a lot of... the electromagnetic fields were, and when I say that, I'm talking about like all the old wiring and all the copper and stuff like that. They were all put in one area, and people that back then didn't think, oh, this would be an issue. But in reality, if you're someone who's very sensitive to that, it makes you, like, you can get migraines, you can get dizzy, you can black out, you can get sick.
Right.
So, like, a part of me, my first thought is, okay, is she one of those that's sensitive to extreme electric magnetic fields?
Right. And that's, I don't know, because I don't know her personally. Yeah. I just heard the story from another friend of mine.
Yeah.
I asked her, I was like, how does she know? And she's, I don't know if she told me, and I don't remember what it was, like how she got them. But I think like they were like messing with a Ouija board one night or something, just like messing around. And she just like felt these energies attract to her. So I'm not sure. But they're not like mean spirits, if that makes sense. They're like there to protect, like they're protective. I don't know. I think it's interesting though. Like, that whole thing fascinates me, but I'm terrified of it. Absolutely terrified.
Yeah, because, like, it's really interesting. Like, on the one hand, like, okay, if a spirit attaches to me that's going to help me, fantastic. I'm supporting this. gonna be a spirit that attaches to me that, like, wants to torment me and never let me sleep again, I'm good, no thanks.
Right. Like, I definitely think demons
are real.
You
don't get to choose.
Yeah, like, exactly. They choose you. Exactly.
Because I was going to say, at that point, how much of is it a spirit and how much is it demonic?
Yeah. Like, that's two separate things. I totally believe demons are real. So, and that shit fucking terrifies me. More than anything.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, because my first thought is like, you mean my ex? I knew he was a demon.
I mean, we tried to tell you. You didn't listen.
Fair statement.
He was definitely, you know, a spawn of Satan.
Fair statement. Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
I was saying, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for being on our show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy I got to do this. I love listening to the show. There have definitely been times I've been, like, listening to you guys, and I'll start yelling at my radio, and I'm like, God, you know these things. Why are you forgetting these things? But yes, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Hopefully I can join you guys again sometime. Hopefully we can get you guys on the Orlando Sideshow so you can join us and talk more about your show.
That would be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
So
to both things.
Yes.
That would be super fun. So, yeah, I'm totally down. But, well, thanks for listening, guys. Remember to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at SpookyYourBust and send us an email at SpookyYourBust@gmail.com. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.